Blog Talk Radio.
Multicultural moments, and I had a little bit of salsa Latin in the background to spice it up and get you ready for our guest. He's very, very special. Let me tell you about New York City. Through the 60s up to the 80s, it was so fertile. New York was going through a renaissance period. Even though in the 70s there was a lot of talk about the high crime, New York was going bankrupt. But there's wondrous things happening. You know, the people on the periphery wasn't aware of it. They just was concentrating on the crime rate and the bankruptcy. But in the meantime, stuff was going on. People were creating like crazy. It was a very artsy scene in New York City that is long gone. There's a burden now. I mean, it's barren right now. So in comparison. But my guest is what I, with all affection, call in a positive way a relic. He's a relic of that great period. He had his foot in it from the late 60s all the way through until today. He was in the mix of that beautiful artsy bohemian scene in New York City that people dream to experience when they come here. But it's gone. My guest, Jesus Papolito Melendez, can fill you in on what it was like and give you the vibe of what it was like. He is an artiste. That means his approach to his creativity is from the heart, not from the ego, not about fame or fortune. It's from the heart. And therefore, he's compelled, like all artists, to take risks, to push the envelope. And people like that are also compelled to be activists, because to be an activist, you have to take a risk. You have to push the envelope. They go hand in hand. So if you are a wannabe or think you are an artiste, you must be pushing some buttons, pushing the limits, being an activist concerned about social issues. That is who my guest is. Hola, how are you?
Wow, Stephanie, that was a way out there intro. Thank you. I really appreciate what you said about everything there, including myself, and because you spoke more than just about me. And thank you. I'm very humbled by what you say. So, you
well,
know,
the movement, it was a great time. And a lot of those folks are gone either because they can't afford to live in New York or they passed over. But you are, you know, you're one of the few who, you know, was in the mix. And
I almost passed over a few times, I'll have you know.
Well, I understand that, you know. So
voluntary and involuntary. You know, let me tell you, you just remember, I once saw a man, well, Pedro, my good friend Pedro Pietri, the late poet, great friend of mine, we had a friendship of over 30 years, you know that. And but one time we saw a man who was attempting suicide on 59th Street and over there at Columbus Circle, from that building where they used to have all the trade shows. I forgot the name of that building. But in San Diego, I had a weird encounter, and it's only because, you know, this conversation, you know, like your intro was so powerful that it made me think about a lot of things. And then we start out, you know, with people not being here and people being here. So there's a gentleman on the roof of a building, like it's a four-story building, and, you know, the police have blocked off everything, you know, and they're trying to talk him down, and he's walking along the edge back and forth, you know, real precariously. So a couple is walking down the street, and they know one of the police officers, so they ask the police officer what's going on, you know, and I happen to be standing next to the police officer. So the cop turns around, you know, hi, Arrow, hi, Mary, whatever, you know, blah, blah. Oh, this guy, you know, he's up there, he's, you know, threatening to commit suicide, you know. So the guy asks him, he says, well, you know, what kind of crime is that, you know? And he goes, well, you know, if he jumps, it's a felony. If we talk him down, it's a misdemeanor.
I love it.
So, you know, anyway, I'm happy to talk to you tonight, and thank you for your postings of A Wound in Time.
I mean, they weren't the official, you know, because for some reason this upgrade on my Mac, I can't download, you know, I can't do it the way I want it. So I'm busy have my tablet taking pictures of my TV showing the footage.
I like it. I didn't realize that there was so much movement in that scene.
It was fabulous. It was Yes, by the way, folks, Papa, as he's affectionately called, he was going to be a special guest in my film, A Wound in Time. And, you know, he was going to be like the spoken word, the poet of Spanish Harlem. And it turns out a role opened up for him. So he also took the role of the Good Samaritan. So anyway, the scene is rocking it. He's doing his poetry.
I'm being typecast.
And Stephen Guadalupe is playing his congas. And the cast members, you know, the leads and supporting, are dancing salsa in the street of Spanish Harlem. Because Spanish Harlem, I mean, even, you know, South Bronx, I grew up in the South Bronx. It was all about you dancing the street. You did all that kind of stuff. So, and Papa was not just reciting. I don't know, your knee went up to your chin or something. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. A friend of mine once told me, said, when your feet leave the ground, you can tell you're having fun.
It was great. The guys, I mean, and my cast was rocking it, honey. That's a very nice scene. Thank you so much.
Good luck. I'm looking forward to your premiere of your. And, you know, I think that the city of New York is offering some.
Money. Somebody sent me Wanda. Wanda Colon. She, you know, she plays the Santera in A Wound in Time. She sent me something about New York Entertainment and Theater, they keep changing the name. But anyway, yeah, so I'm aware of that, so I'll be looking into that, too.
You know, Stephanie, you're on point, so I'm glad, you know. I'm mentioning it to you, but I knew you already knew about it.
I just found out about it today. I wouldn't have known if Wanda hadn't hit me or if you hadn't hit me. So, you know, at least I got it.
And Spike Lee is casting for She's Gotta Have It.
Yeah, it's crazy.
People are doing things, and that's what you started talking about, people doing things. You know, you reminded me when you were saying about the sister Wanda who turned you on to that, and her name is Wanda, what's her last name?
Colon. She played the Santera.
Colon, yeah. My mind flashed onto the sister Wanda Coleman, who is a black L.A. poet, a good friend of mine. She passed away several years ago, but she's really an iconic poet, and people don't know about her. Wanda Coleman. I knew her and her husband, Austin Strauss. They were great people in L.A.
Did she know, like, Nikki Giovanni and all those guys?
She rocked. They knew her. And Tazaki Shange and, you know, all that crowd from the West Coast, you know? You know, and David Henderson and Victor Cruz, you know, Victor Hernandez Cruz, the poet, was like one of the first poets to go west and settle in San Francisco. And Pedro Pietri and myself went out there and visited him in 1975. So we were we were reading like On the Road by Jack Kerouac. We're really like, you know, post-beatnik beatniks.
Right. You know, I'm talking about the Bohemian era. Bohemian. I have a Bohemian soul, even though I have a, you know.
I know, yeah, right. I can tell.
My taste of luxury, but my soul is Bohemian. I'm really boho. I'm definitely boho. I'm definitely a boho.
I saw the best minds of my generation destroyed by madness.
Oh, forget it.
Yeah, well, you know, that era, you know, I mean, if you want to ask me about some stuff.
Yeah, you know, like how did you, okay, because I was there. I was in it. I was even a resident playwright in the 80s. I don't know if you know about Rap Arts. That was on East 3rd Street. It took over a public school over there or something. And so I was a resident playwright in East 3rd. So, I was a single mother, but I still had one foot on the pulse of, you know, I peek in every once in a while into the scene. So I'm very aware of that scene, but I want to know how, you know, from the 60s to the 80s, it was unbelievable. But tell me how you first started to get into the scene.
Well, you know, interesting. That's a great question. And something that probably needs a damn forum.
Honey, it's going to be like part one, part two, part three.
Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead.
You know. Okay. Mm-hmm. First, when I was a little kid, I grew up in East Harlem, on 111th Street. Everybody says where? 111th Street. Okay, between 2nd and 3rd Avenue. In fact, I moved from there into the apartment that I live in now. I was able to reacquire my childhood apartment when I came back to New York City from the West Coast in the 90s. So. You know, my whole history is kind of crazy, but, you know, I've lived in New York, I've lived in Los Angeles, San Diego, and Tijuana, Mexico, and I've traveled a lot, you know, and I've been a bohemian, you know, I've had a
you
hard,
blew my mind
life.
with those videos you were showing me in your apartment. You were blowing my mind. I loved it.
Yeah, I wish
when
we
you were
had
in Mexico
this, like,
and your Aztec. Were you playing Aztec Indian or something? I mean,
oh, I was
so
yeah,
much.
that was for Columbus. That was 1992. That was right before I came to New York, and that was for
It was sad.
We were celebrating. we were anti-celebrating Columbus, and I did a skit.
You're playing
with some
the
dancers
chief or something.
Yeah, I was playing Hatue. Hatue was a Cuban.
Is he Aztec?
He was Cuban, Taino.
Okay.
Yes, mm-hmm. and he was tortured, and you know, by the Spanish, because, like, you know, he refused to subjugate himself to them, and you know, he was a defender of his. He's a warrior chief, and you know, they had to make an example, so they burned him at the stake. These guys, and you know, according to the history of that, is that when they were burning him, or prior, they wanted to know if he wanted to become a Christian, so that you know, his soul would go to heaven. And you know, he retorted that he didn't want to go. He didn't want to go nowhere near where they went, where the hell they died. So I played him, and it was really cool. I have a loincloth on and all of that.
That you blew my mind, man. Okay, I know.
Yeah, well, that's on YouTube.
Wine.
You guys can find it on YouTube.
Wine,
you know,
I didn't need the wine to blow my mind, because that video was like, wow. It was, and you know, and that's the freedom, the risk taking. You know, it was surreal. It was wonderful.
Well, yeah, I thank my Mexican friends, you know. They wanted me to be part of this anti-Columbus thing, and we did it in Agua Calientes, you know, which is this big highway thing, and it's this, they have this tower there, they call it Torre.
Yeah,
it was great. I mean,
it was wild.
I know, yes, and that was
not,
like an all-day thing, you know.
Mexican.
And
you said there were some Anglos too, you know, participating, right? There were all kinds of people from
Mexico.
Yeah,
it was
there.
Like. It was really, really integrated. Yeah, you could see it in the musicians.
Integrated,
you know, it's a three-part video because it was so damn long. But but people can watch it, you know, YouTube it, and you'll find it. But it's
I should have put the YouTube links. I'll put it on after the show. I'll put the links you send me the links to everything, and I put it on. Yeah, I can still put it on.
Yeah,
the
what
show
I did with
program.
The yeah, I think I recently reposted one of them. I think part two, which is when you when I'm on, you know, when I'm tied to the stake, and you know what was beautiful
You're
is that
wild.
They tied me up.
I loved it.
They tied me up on this pole, right? And these dancers come out, you know, that these beautiful dancers come out and they look like these, like, angelic things. Forget about it. And then everybody in the audience has a candle, a lit candle, right? And you can't see that too well on the video, but from where I was, when I, you know, when I looked out there with my eyes, you know, slightly closed, it was like I was looking into outer space, you know. It was like,
oh, wow.
It was really cool. It was really cool.
Yeah, everything was cool.
I miss Mexico.
That's
Mexico
fabulous.
Was very, very good to me.
And what part of you went to Tijuana? You went to Tijuana, huh?
Mainly in
Tijuana,
but I did.
Because I've been to Cancun and Acapulco. I've been there. But you went to Tijuana.
Yeah, right.
I
was
there.
Over in the Yucatan. Went up to.
You went to Yucatan, okay.
Yeah, I went up to Oaxaca, and I climbed pyramids in Montalban, and that's the shit. I want to do that again.
Yeah,
that was like really spiritual. You know, the thing about traveling is that you get to see life from, you know, other people's perspective.
That's what it's all about, to open your mind to, you know, different cultures and stuff. That's one of the benefits, or used to be a benefit, to living in New York, because, like, I'm just exposed to so many cultures, and as a young child, not just like now, but, you know, one time I was the only black kid in my class, and that was a great experience, because now I can walk anywhere and feel like I belong anywhere and sit my ass down anywhere, because I feel I'm a universal person. I belong anywhere I sit my ass down at, and that's how it is, because I was exposed to so many things. I don't feel insecure or lack of confidence. I'm part of all cultures. I love it. Anyway.
You know, I grew up here in East Harlem. I went to the public schools. I got a great education, you know what I mean? Because at that time in the 50s, they were great teachers. Not that they aren't now, you know.
Oh,
just the whole politics of.
Yeah, well, that's why I write today. Yeah.
But you know, we had this particular crop of teachers who moved on. You know, after the 60s, you know what I'm saying? They left the mm-hmm. school system there. And these teachers were the old traditional teachers, you know, who hit
with
a goddamn ruler, you know.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? And there was very, very little multiculturalism in that education body, but there was some.
That's where busing came in, because the reason I had, well, first of all, I grew up in the South Bronx, and it had, the Jews were just leaving and went to the concourse, but they still left their marketplaces and everything. So my grocer, Seymour, and I forgot the other guy's name, this is the guy, I give him a note, you know, so I knew, so I still, a Jewish culture was also kind of part of my culture, because they were still there, the merchants.
Yeah.
But then
right,
I was bused. In the 60s, I was bused. Busing was enforced by
From where to where were you bused? You were bused from where to where?
No, I'm telling you, I was bused from South Bronx to, which was black and Puerto Rican and Cuban, to Little Italy and Arthur Avenue.
Wow.
In the third grade. Yes. I was already exposed to the Jewish culture from, you know, because, I mean, we knew these people. They knew my family. My mother would send me down with a note to get to Seymour, and he'd give it
to
me.
They turned you on
credit.
To bagels and pumpernickel? No?
Yeah, well, listen, honey, I am spoiled. I love my kosher hot dog on a string. I love my kosher pickles. Are you kidding me? In the barrel? Forget it.
I love locks. What are you talking about?
I love it all. I love it all. Come on, you kidding me?
You know, yeah. You see, that is so great what you're telling me, Stephanie. I had no idea and I'm sure that
in the third grade Italian culture, I think I'm. I was just at the feast the other day helping out. I feel comfortable wherever I am, with whatever people. If they have a problem with me, that's their fucking problem. Because I
it's
feel
because they
I
got a problem, right? Right.
I
right.
feel comfortable. It's great.
That's lovely. Anyway. Yeah, you see, you know, and like for instance, I was teaching in a school in the South Bronx, and I had a play going on, you know, downtown on 43rd Street in the West Side. And, you know, we were discussing getting the students to go see it. And one of the problems was, yeah, I mean, you know, we were going to buy the tickets and everything, was actually, you know, in this particular situation, in this environment, you know, that was a hard thing to get happen. Not because of the purchase of the tickets, but because the students were reticent to leave their community.
That's the problem. People need to get out of fucking communities and expose themselves to many. Well, yeah, that's it. Okay. I don't even. We're going to continue
with
this.
Yeah, and it shocked me.
And
I blew my mind
many
because
different segments. So keep continue with that because we're gonna. Yeah, go ahead. We're hitting the button. We're getting.
Well,
it. We're
I grew up
it.
In
okay.
East Harlem here. I grew up in East Harlem, and you know, the building that I lived in that I spoke about earlier, that actually I moved from there to here. I was able to reacquire my apartment when I came back to New York in the early 90s, around 94. I got my apartment back, my original apartment that I grew up in as a little kid in the 50s. And I lived there until I moved to this place here. And the thing is that when you would walk inside my old building, it was like the United Nations, you know, because there were still old Jewish families that lived like on the second floor. You know what I mean? There was a guy.
Mm-hmm.
There was a pianist. He was a pianist, and he used to play. I think he taught piano in my building. An old black guy, looked like a jazz musician, and you would always hear the piano coming out of his house. There was always jazz coming out of apartments, and then there was Latin music coming out of the apartment. It was really
and not to mention. Not to mention, there's a Little Italy in Spanish Harlem.
Yeah, right.
So you got the Italian thing going on there,
right,
too.
Right, over there on Pleasant Avenue, on 16th
yeah,
Street.
Yeah, Pleasant Avenue, everything. And everybody went to, there's a Mont Carmel Church, it's a Catholic school over there or whatever. Yeah, you know, so this is what it is. Yeah, I understand
that. We used
that.
To go to that festival as a kid, you know, and I used to like those little puffy things that they deep fry and then they put confectioner's sugar on them. And they come up,
yeah.
They put them in a little brown paper bag for you, you know. It was all greasy
I'm
in the bottom.
I'm a cannoli girl.
You know, cannolis are like too intense for me. They're like,
oh,
well, get it.
I don't want to.
I got
to
have a piece of cannoli.
Cannoli.
Golly, yeah, leave the gun, take the cannolis. Yes, that's the Godfather. Quotations from the Godfather.
Oh, okay.
Which they filmed, you know, several scenes in that neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, and in the Lower East Side as well. So, you know, but anyway.
Yeah, and
in
Staten Island too, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I grew up in that kind of neighborhood, and my first best friends were the African-American people who lived in my building on my floor, below me and above me and in the building and the sister building next door. You know, this was like Snooky and Wilbur Benjamin.
Yeah,
and,
I was
you know,
to school with a guy named Snooky. Yeah.
You know, yeah, you know, I've written about
Snooky.
Yeah, I've written about Snooky. You had a friend named Snooky?
In my, I could show you his picture in the first grade. I'm going to post it on Facebook and I will point Snooky out. Yes.
Yeah, Snooky. His real name is Ricky Lancaster. God bless him wherever he is. And Wilbur and all my friends. But you know what it is? When I stepped out of my apartment, out of my Spanish-speaking apartment, on the fifth floor of this building, and I met, you know, went out into the world. I'm a little kid. What am I, five or, you know, whatever the hell, four? You know, when I became aware, self-aware.
Yeah, exactly.
I bump into Snooky, right? And we get into a fight, you know. It's a stupid as shit fight, right? But we get into this rolling thing down the staircase, ridiculous. And
oh, no.
So after that, you know, we're in each other's house forever, right? You know, he lives right above me on the sixth floor. And that was my crowd. And, you know, I got a lot of cultural you know, input from another. Check that out. I'm a Puerto Rican, but I'm hanging out with these black kids. But we were all colored. Mm-hmm. I got to say that. We were all colored. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
That was our, you know, that was our designation, cultural designation. And what the advantage of that in the 50s especially was that you get this imbuement of English, of the understanding of English in American culture. It's like a mainline into what's going on. You understand that you come as an immigrant, you know, because my family, you know, Puerto Ricans don't immigrate to New York because they're citizens because of the Jones Act. They just move. It's the same thing as moving from Minnesota to California.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
Theoretically.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Since
it's
what,
not
since
like,
what
you
year
know,
was that? What year was that? That Puerto Rico became a Commonwealth, or
That was
1898.
Yeah, 1898, I believe, was the annexation of Puerto Rico into the American second class reality that it's always been in. And you know, and yeah, you know, when your sovereignty is usurped by some power that's an imperialistic power that's in denial. You know, and
we're going to talk about Puerto Rico too in the next segment. Believe me, I got to.
The only thing I want to say right now in this segment, because by the time we meet again, is that you know we're having a massive demonstration in Washington D.C. on a Sunday, October 9th. We have a bunch of buses.
Okay, I gotta have you guys to talk about it. Okay.
Yeah, we have a bunch of buses leaving from New York City that are, and from other places, Chicago, Philly, and et cetera, you know, and they're going to all, and people come from Puerto Rico, and they're going to converge in Lafayette Park across the street from the White House to insist that Oscar Lopez Rivera be freed. He's been in prison for 35 years for sedition, you know, which, you know, that's the same thing they charge Christ with, for Christ's sake. And also, you know, against the Promesa deal, which is like this thing that's like charging Puerto Rico this massive debt for being a colony for, you know, 100
years.
Yeah,
why is Puerto Rico having so many financial problems? We only have 3 minutes. That's weird.
Oh, gee, we never got to a poem.
You know, to ask you such a question at a time like this. But
thank
like
you.
Said,
no, the space that you just... space, Stephanie, that you just allowed for me to mention that is, you know, I'm very grateful for that. I have a lot of stuff to share with you, and I'd be happy to do this again, but I'm happy that
we're
going to
do it again. After the march on Washington, I want you to be my guest. I'm a scheduled show. You let me know. What day is the 9th?
The 9th is a Sunday. And I'm going to read a poem that I wrote for Oscar Lopez myself that I'm really happy that I'm going to get a chance to read that in Washington, D.C., you know, in one of the presentations that we're making here.
How about the 9th? How about the Thursday after the 9th that you're my guest at the same time, same place, to recap?
The Thursday after the 9th. Okay, okay.
Yeah, I'm going to schedule that and because I'd like to hear about that and I'd like to – for you to recite some poetry and everything, and want to talk about the situation that's going on in this country.
Thank you.
Well, Puerto Rico is part of this country, but to talk about the mainland, the nonsense that's going on here, and also, you know, the arts and activism, how they go together for many of us, for the real folks. But anyway, so
yeah, because you know this is really a bad civil rights time right now in the United States, and I'm old enough to goddamn see that and realize that, you know.
Oh, I'm old enough. I know. I saw it on.
You know what I'm saying?
TV.
So we could say that because people are very naive. See, that's why you gotta like you started. You
well,
gotta know about the past.
About that,
you know, people gotta. You know.
The newcomers, they don't get it. Honey.
Yes, I hear you.
All right, darling.
Thank you very much, Stephanie.
Okay. Next time, I'm going to reschedule a new show. God bless you. Thank you. And
you
everyone
too.
Else,
thank you
for tuning in to Multicultural Moments. And in the meantime, to our next show, make sure you have a multicultural moment. It will help make America great. Yay! God
thank
bless you.
You,
baby. Love you. Bye-bye. You know, I was drinking Pinot Grigio. Countdown. Okay. It was a great show. Oh, and my